Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play. Welcome to the Fallout Lorecast, the podcast that explores the boundaries of our knowledge about the world of Fallout.
In preparing for this episode about Good Neighbor, I realized that there is a very interesting dynamic at play, not only in this location in Fallout 4, but in the history of this location, the very buildings that a number of the buildings in this community are modeled after, and what was going on in Boston historically compared to what happens in Fallout 4. And that dynamic, that balance is between freedom and crime. This dynamic is something that has plagued the United States since its inception. As an American, we like to consider ourselves the land of the free, but the balance between how much freedom do you get and how much is too much? How much freedom is a good thing, and yet how much freedom allows people to do nefarious things that actually work against the goodness of the culture? In today's episode, we're going to take a look at the foundations of Good Neighbor. We're going to reflect back on the way that Good Neighbor was founded in Fallout 4 and the reasons for its foundation. But we're also going to find that Good Neighbor in Fallout 4 echoes some of the very themes of a free libertarian kind of society and the balance between that and the seedy underbelly of historic Boston. Before we get into all the historical detail about the real-world Boston and this specific part of Boston, the financial district, which is where Good Neighbor is built, we have to do a little recap here about what actually happens in Fallout 4 and how this becomes a community, a small village, I guess you could say, a neighborhood. According to the Vault Dweller Survival Guide map, it explains Good Neighbor like this. Built on an ancient area of Boston once known as Scole Square, Good Neighbor was founded in the year 2240 by a group of criminals banished from Diamond City. But appearances can be deceiving. Although plagued with problems, Good Neighbor has its finer qualities. There are no social classes, so everyone is truly equal. There is no bigotry, and even ghouls are accepted. Good Neighbor has proven instrumental in the success of the railroad's operations. Mayor Hancock and his squeeze Fahrenheit are holed up here. The mayor is well-liked, if a little cutthroat. He is guarded by the neighborhood watch. Don't confuse them with the less friendly triggermen. This four-floor mansion has a lot of chems to steal if you're so inclined, and holotapes extolling the virtues of the railroad. Now, this foundation of this community was built on criminals looking for a different life because they were kicked out of Diamond City. And what happens when a bunch of criminals get together? Well, oftentimes you have infighting, you have gangs that form, you have communities that are built around loyalty to a specific leader, but the willingness to cut each other's throats in order to get on top. And when you think of these kinds of situations, normally you don't consider equality to be part of it. In fact, most of these kinds of situations are highly authoritarian. You have somebody at the top, or somebody at the top of each of the different gangs, each of the different groups, each of the different sections of the community who rules from the top, and everyone else is below them. And usually there is a group of people who are closer to that head individual who have privileges, and then the majority sit at the bottom and they feed off the scraps. But in Good Neighbor, that's not how this actually works. And a lot of that probably has to do with John Hancock. A man named Vic was originally the mayor of the town. And mayor is a loosely used phrase here for Vic, but also for John Hancock. You see, Hancock replaced Vic as the mayor not due to some voting process, but due to violence. He overthrew Vic's rule, and Vic had kind of overstayed his welcome at that point. People were not too happy with him. He had his men slaughter Vic, and he took power through violence. Hancock explains it himself in dialogue from the game.
So, the night of, we all got loaded, let Vic's boys get good and hammered, and burst from the windows and rooftops where we'd been hiding. They never even saw it coming. We didn't have to fire a shot. We didn't have to, but we sure fucking did. It was a massacre. Once we'd mopped up, we strolled right into Vic's quarters in the state house, wrapped a rope around his neck, and threw him off the balcony. And there I am, gun in hand, draped in Hancock's duds, looking at all the people of Good Neighbor assembled below. I had to say something. That first time I said them, they didn't even feel like my words. Of the people, for the people, was my inaugural address. Became Mayor Hancock of Good Neighbor that day. And from then on, I vowed I'd never stand by and watch. Ever again.
As so often happens, the people get tired of the abuses of one form of leadership or government, and then they push back, and they allow somebody else to step in, somebody else who is strong, somebody else who will say the things that they will rally around. Freedom for the people, by the people. And many politicians, many leaders in these situations will simply say the thing that they know the people want to hear, and then we'll do the opposite. Fortunately, Hancock was different. He was a man who at least attempted to stand by his words. He's somebody who pulled himself up out of the gutter and created something more. A community that not only allowed the freedoms, the libertarian-style freedoms, to allow people to do what they needed to do what they wanted to do. A community that openly sold weapons at Kill or Be Killed, a place where you could easily buy chems or spend the night with a, well, companion over at the Hotel Rexford, and even a place that can hack your mind. These kinds of locations allowed the denizens of Good Neighbor to do what they wanted to do as long as they kept the peace. And if they didn't, Hancock's justice was swift and without any remorse. Now, what I find most interesting about Good Neighbor is not just the idea that these criminals could create a libertarian-style society. It's the fact that a society that is driven and ruled over by some form of dictator. And let's be honest, Hancock still wasn't voted in. He has the approval of the people, but he wasn't voted in. This is not a democracy. But yet, in this type of dictatorship, you don't have the most generally connected ideologies to a situation like this, and that would be authoritarian, something that is extremely conservative in its approach. And I don't just mean conservative in the sense of just a little bit right from center. I mean conservative in the sense of I'm going to take care of myself, everyone else has to take care of themselves, and everyone else doesn't have to be equal. In fact, it's probably better off that the people at the top are the people I want to be at the top, and everyone else can be at the bottom. But that's not how this society works. It also doesn't work on the completely flip side of the scale, and it's extremely liberal. This is not a place where you're going to find a bunch of bleeding hearts, a bunch of people who are demanding the redistribution of wealth in order to make sure that everyone is equal. But yet, the ideology here stays very libertarian. Basically, you have the freedom to do what you want to do as long as you don't go too far and hurt other people. But then it also swings left and goes liberal with this sense of equality. Nobody is above anyone else. There are no tiers to the class system here. And it's an interesting combination, and one that I'm not aware of happens very much in our own world. So correct me if I'm wrong about that. If there are some other examples other than what I'm about to talk about, then please let me know. Comment kindly. Fill me in on some details here. But what is interesting about this is that it does reflect more of the history of Boston than you would first assume. This idea of this freedom, a young country where you can come and do whatever you want in order to make a name for yourself, in order to support yourself and your family, but also that all men are created equal. And that's another very American thing. And this balance is precarious. We've seen it many times in our own history where we don't actually strike that balance. The whole issue with slavery during the origins in the first half of this country were based on that dilemma. How is everyone created equal if people aren't actually acting like everyone is created equal? How does that work? And in the history of Boston, we have some examples of this in the very locations that show up in Good Neighbor in Fallout 4. Let's go back in time. Now, there are some locations, and I'll go over those real fast right here, that I'm not aware of a direct analog in the history of Boston. Places like Daisy's Discounts, Kill or Be Killed, Bobby's Place. These are all locations that could be in the corners of or in the middle of any block in the city. They don't have any real noted history in the game. The locations appear fairly generic compared to the rest of the buildings. But we do have buildings that are directly connected to real locations in Boston. Let's start with the Old State House. Now, this is a location that still goes by exactly the same name. The Old State House is still standing in Boston today. It was built in 1713, and it is the oldest public building in Boston. Now, this is years. This is 63 years before the Revolutionary War. This building was the seat of the General Court until 1798. So what started as the Massachusetts Townhouse, which no longer stands, it was a wooden building, and this was the seat of the colonial government from 1713 to 1776, to the Revolutionary War itself. This is where people would get together and discuss the foundations of democracy and how this country could be built and how we would break away, and we, I'm obviously an American, would break away from British rule. In 1776, it was from this very building that Colonel Thomas Crafts read the Declaration of Independence from the East Side balcony to the crowds below. This was a place that stood not only for the foundations of government, for liberty, for freedom, but also as a court, also as a town hall, also as a museum that kept track of the history of this very location and the nation as a whole. You could build an analogy here that the center of Good Neighbor is the very center of America. It is also the foundation that Good Neighbor is built on, this idea of freedom and equality together at the same time. And interestingly enough, the actual history of our country is kind of modeled in the events that happened in Good Neighbor. The United States didn't vote its way into freedom from the British. Hancock did not vote his way into being the mayor of Good Neighbor. In both instances, violence was the thing that created the situation that came after. And fortunately, in both situations, the leadership that took root after that was more for the freedom and equality of the people than it was for domineering over everyone else. And in our situation with the US, we have a country that was founded on principles of democracy, voting, the power of the people, and in Hancock's very own words, freedom for the people, by the people. The foundations of Good Neighbor may not have been built on democracy, but during Hancock's time, and maybe afterwards, it might become a more democratic system where the next mayor is voted in, similar to the origins of the United States. And all of that is based around a location that exists in both places, the Old State House.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
All right, so let's move on to another interesting location. We have the Third Rail. Now, this is the music club that is owned by Hancock, and according to the Vault Dweller's Survival Guide, it says this about the music club. After Ham the Doorman lets you in, take a restroom break for some light reading before visiting Whitechapel, Charlie's Bar, constructed from the remains of Scully Square subway station. Downstairs, you can chinwag with the governor. Charlie has a task he'd like assistance with. Flirt with Magnolia, the lounge singer, or steal a holotape with a Gwinnett Pills receipt on it. The VIP area has MacReady and some rough types hanging around. Now, a club built into the remnants of a rail station, pretty cool idea. But the most interesting thing about this location is the Mr. Handy, Whitechapel Charlie.
Order up, or forever hold your damn mouth shut.
Interestingly, and almost unexpectedly, he has a English Cockney accent. Now, why would that be? Why would you have a Mr. Handy with this kind of accent, this kind of personality, even a Union Jack stamped on his chassis? Well, I have some theories about that as well. Let's look at his name, Whitechapel. The name combined with his accents leads us to a historic district at the east end of London, also named Whitechapel, and it was known for its multicultural heritage and significant historical events, similar to this location in Boston, even though it was in London. But the similarities don't end there. These are both historic locations, and sure, the history of the United States, or at least the, well, European history of the United States goes back to only a few hundred years. The history of London goes back to before the time of the Romans. If we go back to the time of the Romans, we find that Whitechapel was on the Roman road in London. Well, not exactly in London, just outside the city walls. This was a place originally, and we're going back 2,000 years at this point, that was designed to be a place where the people who did not fit into the regular city of London would have to go in order to create their own place, their own neighborhood, just outside the city walls. This feels very, very similar to the reason why Good Neighbor exists at all in Fallout 4, a place for the people who were exiled or not welcome in other places to come together. And in fact, throughout history, in the 18th and 19th centuries, it was a location that people would come to from outside of England. During the Irish Potato Famine, people from Ireland would move here. During the events of the middle of the 20th century with World War II, Jewish refugees would come here. The name Whitechapel is another reminder of why Good Neighbor exists at all. And it all comes together with a kind of surly Mr. Handy who's going to serve you a drink at the bar. So let's head over to another location that has a strong connection to a real-world place. Let's go to the Memory Den. Now, you're all familiar with the Memory Den. You have to go to this location in order to further the main quest line. And if you haven't really gotten that far in Fallout 4, what are you doing to listen to this show anyway? Go play Fallout 4 and then come back. But the Memory Den is interesting because if you look at it from the outside, you can see Skolle SQ for square up on the big overhanging facade, I guess is what you could call it. Now, of course, this is the place that's run by Dr. Amira and Irma, and it's the place that you go in order to sit down in one of those memory loungers and relive the most exciting part, I say sarcastically, of Fallout 4. But the outside of this location clues us into where it may actually be in the real world. A place called Gordon's Olympia Theater. Now, this was a actual theater, and there are pictures of this location that still exist. You can find online. It was established in 1910, but unfortunately, the building was demolished in 1996, so it no longer stands in the real world, but it does lend a little bit more credence to the idea that the universe of Fallout broke away from our own history well before that date. And there's another episode about that, so go check that out if you haven't listened to that episode yet. But why does this match the Memory Den? Well, if you look at the outside of the theater, the shape of the marquee is kind of similar. It's got a similar kind of arc to it with some wording on it, although the one in Fallout is distinctly more stylized. The inside of it, you could draw some connections to as well. The way that the layout of the building seems to work is kind of based around the same style of design, although The structural details of the building are not identical. They're similar, but the location is pretty close. Scully Square was known as the Entertainment District, and the Gordon Theater is located right around the same location, but not exactly the same exact location. If you look on a map, these things are a little bit different, but that's normal for the Fallout games. Things kind of get condensed and moved around a little bit. Now, there's another reason why Gordon's Olympia Theater makes sense as a historical reference for Good Neighbor. This was a place that not only hosted vaudeville acts, and the vaudeville performers were often traveling groups that would do all sorts of different kinds of entertainment and performances. They would travel, and they were made up of, well, a variety of different kinds of people who were trying to make their way in the world, including some with very shady pasts who didn't want to stay in the same location for too long. Although, that's not true of all of the entertainers. But it also is the site of a famous individual, Wilbur Mills. In 1974, he was the chairman of the House Ways and Means Committee, and this was during the height of a sexual scandal with a Fanny Fox. And he was having a press conference, but it was actually more like a drunken rant to the public about why he wasn't actually doing what he was caught doing, and then he shortly resigned. And this feels spot on for a location like Good Neighbor, where individuals like this might actually have done very similar kinds of public rants when being outed about their own nefarious deeds. Now, we're not going to get to every single little detail, little hole in the wall in Good Neighbor, but there is one more that I find has some interesting historical significance. The Hotel Rexford. Now, this is the location that is owned by the chem dealer Morosky, and in its past, it actually catered to a sophisticated crowd and would throw parties. And before the Great War, there is a little bit of history about this location. It was a client of Gwinnett Brewery, which ordered half-barrel kegs of Gwinnett Pale Ale, Peabody Pilsner, Dead Redcoat Ale, and Bunker Hill Brew on a daily basis. We know a little bit of those details from the game, but there might be more to this location. If you look at it carefully and you consider some of the other locations in Boston that may have been influential in the creation of this location for Fallout, the one that seems to most likely match it is a place called the Ames Building. It's located in roughly the correct location. This is downtown Boston. Also, it was built in 1889, and until 1915, it was the tallest building in Boston. It was one of the very earliest skyscrapers at about 14 floors. Now, in today's world, that isn't really that big, but at that time, it was a prominent feature of Boston's skyline. Now, why this location? Well, if you look at some of the details, like the block construction, like the yellow tinge that's kind of faded off of the building, the Art Deco styling of the walls, and what appear to be pillars with arches and some other design aesthetics, they're fairly similar. Now, they're not exact, just like the Memory Den is not exactly like Gordon's Olympia Theater, but they are pretty close. And there's also similarities in how the building was used. From 2009 to 2019, it was a luxury boutique hotel under the name The Ames Boston Hotel, but eventually it was closed and it was purchased by Suffolk University and is now used as a dormitory. So if you happen to be a student there and you live in this dorm, then think about that every so often. You're living in Good Neighbor. That's pretty cool. So I think that you can see in the very history of these buildings that Good Neighbor is built on top of and with some of the same very buildings that historically meant similar things. Places that built foundations for freedom and equality. The places that people would go to do those things. The places that people would go when they were foreigners or they were ostracized from their own homes. Good Neighbor, much like the very locations in historic Boston, represents that tricky dynamic between how much freedom do you give people and at what point do they take advantage of that and start doing nefarious things? The history of Good Neighbor is analogous to the history of the United States of America, and you can see it in its buildings.
Hello there, old chap. Good to see another of General Atomic's finest, still eager to serve.
Have you checked out the Patreon yet? Patreon.com/FalloutLoreCast, where you can sign up and get ad-free episodes and t-shirts and stickers and join us for patron chats. And I have to welcome our newest patrons, Remy Riot and Justin M. Thank you so much for your support. You keep the show going, and I really do appreciate it. And then we've got our sentry bots, Germinator and Dusty Ray. Thanks for your support as well. And to all 107 of our current paid patrons, thank you so very much. And also to our free patrons. I don't have a total number for them, but thank you for joining us as well. And you'll get notifications if I'm taking a week off or vacation or something like that. So head over to patreon.com/followlorecast. Go check out everything you can get. Also, we got some new reviews on Apple Podcasts. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple, I almost messed that up. I'll read out your review on a future episode, like this one from Scotland Topaz, who writes, "Very genuine and down to earth. This podcast has made my workday so much more enjoyable over the past few months. I have been battling with postpartum depression since having my daughter, and turning this on allowed me to escape to the nostalgia of Fallout. I joined the Discord, and Tom made it so personal just by giving a wave. He's super down to earth and just an overall wholesome dude that has made my love for Fallout grow. I'm now at episodes 323 and so excited that I've made it this far." Wow, that's a lot of episodes. Thank you so much, Scotland Topaz, and I hope the whole parenting thing works out. I hope the whole postpartum depression subsides. I know that is a very tricky time. I have two children of my own. I obviously did not give birth to them myself, but have been through that, you know, through the whole family thing. So I hope that goes better, and thank you for the kindness. And I do try to say hi to everybody who joins in. So if you do join us on the Discord, there's a link in the description. You can come say hi, and I'll say hi, and you can go into the Fallout Lorecast channel. There's always people in there talking about all sorts of different things, lore topics, what's going on in the games, all that kind of stuff. So come join us and give me a little wave, and you know, I'll return it, and maybe we'll chat a little bit. All right, thank you so much, Scotland Topaz. And then this one comes from Jetaholic, who writes, "Great podcast. If you love the world of Fallout, this is the perfect podcast. I'm late to the party, but this podcast adds something new for me. I mainly listen to sports podcasts, but this is a nice change of pace." Well, thanks again for checking it out. I'm glad you tried something different, and I'm glad you're enjoying it. So thank you to everybody. I appreciate all your support. And if you want to share the show with a friend or anything else, oh, and also make sure you check out the YouTube videos. I'm turning older episodes into videos with all sorts of cool stuff. And I did actually just put one up this week about, I want to say Good Neighbor because I just talked about Good Neighbor, Diamond City, because it was another location. And that kind of inspired me to do this episode because that episode seems to be doing really well. People seem to really like the video version of that. So this will probably become a video version at some point soon, which would be fun. So go check that out. Follow Lorecast on YouTube. All right. Have a wonderful rest of your week. Thanks for hanging out. I'll see you next time. To plug into everything else we're doing, check out robotsradio.net. Reach out to me on Twitter at robots_radio. Check out the Robots Radio Rocket Club, where you can join me and a bunch of our other creators creating your podcast, starting a new podcast, or helping your current podcast grow. There's more information about that on robotsradio.net as well. And you can always talk with us and the entire community, over 2,000 people on the Robots Radio Discord. Come join us. We'd love to chat with you. See you guys next time.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.